In September, I attended a youth leaders conference in Unalakleet. A group of students and teachers were sitting in the bleachers of the school gymnasium, although at one point, it felt more like we were in a sports arena.
All right, crowd, are you ready for this?
One of the hosts of this conference was Nick Hansen, whom you might know better by the name The Eskimo Ninja. That's what he goes by on the television show American Ninja Warrior, which he has competed on for the past two seasons. He opened the conference by setting up a makeshift ninja course in the gym. 2 years in, Nick is an American Ninja Warrior regular. He's used to all the flashy, intense obstacles on the show. But it was clear that Nick was enjoying completing this little improvised course for an audience of kids just as much, if not more. My name is Lauren Frost, and this is Story 49. In today's episode, we're talking to two competitors, two young people from Alaska who recently participated in a national competition. But the things they've done on the national stage aren't as incredible as the things they're doing to encourage and inspire other young people back at home in Alaska. First, we'll hear more from Nick Hansen. Then, we'll talk to Rosemary Berg, a young woman from Point Hope and Anchorage who is the reigning Miss Alaska United States. First, a quick warning. In today's show, there's some discussion of suicide, of depression, and of sexual assault. The two people I interviewed have been affected by some of these issues, either directly or through friends. Listening to them speak about how they overcame their hardships was an experience that I found really inspiring and hopeful. But if these topics are too difficult for you to hear about, you might want to pause the program. Part 1. Nick Hansen moved to Unalakleet from Eagle River when he was 6 years old. Here's Nick.
But Unalakleet's home. It's always been home. I went to school here. My family and friends are all from here, so Unalakleet is where I reside and where I shall after it's all over.
That said, he didn't always have an easy time growing up.
So I was teased a lot when I was growing up, and I was kind of forced into becoming an active person, and the way to fit in, I realized, in Unalakleet was to play sports. And so in third grade, I went to basketball practice, and I didn't think about anybody else. I intentionally chose, as a third grader, to omit everybody else's opinions or whatever they might say and just listen to my coach. And I listened to what my coach had to say. I did what he told me to do. And I ended up loving it, and they ended up loving me. So I became this really active person, and I just started joining every sport because I wanted to be in. I wanted to participate. After that, after I started feeling that energy, you know, I just started participating in everything. And next thing you know, I was, you know, captain of the basketball team. I played mixed six volleyball. I was this great NYO athlete that I turned into. I was running cross country 17th in the state, and I was just like doing it all the time. And I still am.
As an adult, Nick started coaching at the Unalakleet school. He coaches cross country, volleyball, the Native Youth Olympics, sometimes basketball. But as athletic as he is, the first time he heard about the show American Ninja Warrior, he didn't think much of it.
Me and my friend Isaiah, we decided we wanted to learn martial arts. So we were typing in ninja because we didn't know the difference. So we researched a bunch of it and we typed in ninja, and on YouTube came this Ninja Warrior thing. And we were like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. But that's not really what we're looking for, as cool as it is.
2 years later, the topic of American Ninja Warrior came up again. This time, it was the kids he was coaching who brought it up.
They were like, hey, Nick, you should be on that show, that American Ninja Warrior show. And I was like, okay, what's that? And then I watched it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember watching this with Isaiah. And then so I was like, all right.
He agreed to try out for the show, just like that. So when they suggested that you should do it, were you reluctant at first or were you just like, yeah, I'll do it?
No, I wasn't reluctant at all. I was like, yeah, okay. Because when the kids and the youth here, you know, I want to make sure that they have someone that's positive and role model for them. You know, I want to make sure that they have someone that, you know, isn't afraid to take a chance. And when they said, you should do it, I said, okay. You know, I mean, why not? When they say something like that and there's what's the worst that can happen is no, you go for it, you know, because, I mean, either you get denied or you get accepted. And either way, you just kind of roll with the punches.
To apply, Nick sent in a paper application and an audition tape. In his videotape, he had to demonstrate why he could be the next American Ninja Warrior.
My first video, I took it as I need to show my athletic ability because this is an intense athletic event. So I just put all of my WIO tapes, all the World Eskimo Indian Olympics, my NYO stuff, and what the games mean to me and why I participate in the games. And they really enjoyed the knuckle hop. I think the knuckle hop is what got me on, to be honest, because I had 138 feet or so on the knuckle hop that video particularly, and I happened to win gold that video clip as well. So I kind of, you know, played that up. You got to kind of sell yourself. I wanted to make sure that they knew. It was, I want to say February, sometime in early February, I got a phone call and the guy on the other line, I was like, hello, this is Nick. He was like, hey, this is Jeffrey from American Ninja Warrior. I was like, oh, hey, what's up? And Jeffrey said, so do you want to be in Houston or LA? And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, do you want to be in Houston or LA? You got on the show. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, be excited. Houston or LA. So on the phone, I was like trying to be real cool and professional. I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm wherever you guys want me to be, whatever's necessary. I have family in LA, so it'll be easier for me to go to LA. But if I have to go to Houston, hey, I'll take it. And he was like, all right, cool. Yeah, be excited. And then as soon as I got off the phone, I was like, no way. And I'm like celebrating. I'm jumping up and down. I'm screaming, woo, yeah. And then I turn around and there's nobody in the room. It's just me. And I'm just like, ah, where's my mom? Where's my dad? You know, so I start calling everybody. Where are you at? Where are you at? But I really wanted to celebrate in person with as many people as I could. So I drove around and went all over town. And I'm like, I got on. And everyone's like, no, yeah. So I got to celebrate like 30 times before the end of the day. It was so much fun.
For those who haven't seen the show, here's how American Ninja Warrior works. There are three rounds, city qualifiers, city finals, and the Las Vegas finals, which has four stages. You have to either finish the course or get one of the fastest times to make it through the city qualifiers and the city finals. At the Las Vegas finals, you're timed down, and you have to complete the course within that time limit to move on. The course is essentially an obstacle course. It's full of physical tasks that test your agility, your strength, your technique. One of the most well-known obstacles is called the warped wall. That's a 14.5-foot curved wall that the contestants have to run up the side of, kind of like, well, a ninja. Another is the salmon ladder, which requires contestants to hang off of a metal bar and hop it up a series of rungs. Imagine doing chin-ups while simultaneously pulling yourself up a ladder.
So how do you train for something like that?
Training for American Ninja Warrior depends on the person. I literally just do the native games. The World Eskimo Indian Olympics and the NYO games, those games prepare you perfectly for what American Ninja Warrior brings because it's a full body workout in every game that you play. It's a lot of balance, it's a lot of accuracy, it's a lot of agility. And the native games just prepared me perfectly. The only thing that I wasn't prepared enough for was the grip. So what I did to make up for it was I built a few obstacles in, you know, on the beach here in Unalakleet, and including a salmon ladder, a devil steps, ultimate cliffhanger, some floating doors, and those are all grip strength and high grip intensity, and I just go play on them all day, and it's like my little playground.
On season 7, his first season, Nick missed qualifying for the city finals by 0.3 seconds. That season was over for him. but he decided to apply again the next year for season 8.
So why were you interested in coming back to the show? Did you have new goals the second time around?
Oh, absolutely. I started it off doing it for, you know, the kids that said do it. And just being on the show was awesome and fun. But I really wanted to hit that buzzer, you know. And that's a selfish goal for sure. I'm doing it for my community. I'm doing it for Alaska for sure. But, you know, selfishly, I really want it for myself as well. And not because I want to win $1 million. Not because I want to be famous. It's because I want to overcome something and I want to reach a goal that I've set for myself. That's what I preach to my kids and coach and everything. So if I wasn't to lead by example, you know, what kind of coach am I?
Well, Nick reached his goal. He made it to the top of the warped wall and hit the buzzer at the city qualifiers.
And then I was like, well, why stop here? Let's keep on going. Let's do as best as we can. So the next episode, I went through and I made it to the Las Vegas finals.
Remember, stage 1 of the Las Vegas finals is timed down. Nick had 2 minutes and 20 seconds to complete the course. And sadly,
I timed out. I was looking at the buzzer. I climbed the top of the cargo net at the end, and I was looking at the buzzer when my time went off. So another exactly like season 7 where I was 3/10 shy. I was right there looking at it, and I still clicked it, but it was after the time was over. So
luckily, losing on American Ninja Warrior isn't really like losing. The other competitors are not rooting for you to fail. Here's Nick.
Ninja Warrior is just like WIO. And one thing that we do in WIO is we all support each other. We all coach each other to do better. And even if that means we lose, it's okay because we helped our competitor become stronger. And the reason for that, that competitive help, the coaching that we do, is because we want our hunters to be just as strong as we are. We want to make sure that if we get injured on a hunting trip, they can help us out. So we always encourage that. And Ninja Warrior is exactly the same. It is exactly the same mentality. Everybody's just so disappointed, like, when someone doesn't do their best. Yeah, sure, they might have fell, and that's, you know, you're disappointed in them falling, but it's not that. It's that they weren't able to achieve what we know they're capable of. I think that really sets us apart as a sport from other sports because we get to be a little bit more intimate with each other, and we really do become a ninja family.
Nick says some of his best friends are people he's met on American Ninja Warrior. And if you watch the show, you can see some of his fellow competitors cheering for him.
And on the course right now, one of our favorites, this is Nick Hansen, the coach from Unalakleet, Alaska, better known as the Eskimo Ninja.
What's it like for you to watch yourself on TV?
Honestly, I laugh so much. I'll be honest with you, I don't remember anything from season 7 or 8 while I'm on the course. I remember everything right up until I stepped out into the placement and took my cuss book off. And after I took my cuss book off, I don't remember what happened on the quad steps. I don't remember what happens on the, you know, I-beam. I don't remember any of it. So it's kind of my chance to remember it and kind of see it happening. And I get a chance to go, oh yeah, that's how it felt. Oh yeah, that's what I was doing. And I look at my face and go, oh my gosh, look how much pain I was in. I don't even realize how much pain I was in. Like, I'm grimacing. And Akbar and Matt.
Those are the commentators.
Akbar and Matt do a really great job of making sure that everybody, look at his face.
Oh, look at that face. He is struggling. No!
Next season, Nick's goal is to push the buzzer in stage 1 of the Las Vegas finals. But until then, he's keeping busy at home in Unalakleet.
Here in Unalakleet, my main thing is that I'm a coach. I'm a coach and a leader in that sense. First and foremost, I want to make sure that I set a good example for the next generation, set a good example for the youth. If there's any way that I can make an impact in one of the youths of Unalakleet, then that's one more kid that can be me when, you know, can take my place and can be the next role model for the next generation. And when I have kids, I want my kids to be able to look up to somebody that, you know, they idolize. You know, I want to make sure that they idolize a good role model. And if I'm helping generate, you know, a lot more role models with my coaching and with my teaching and with whatever I can do in the community, then I've done that. And it's not just me. There's plenty of community members in UnoCleate that are doing the same as I am, especially our teachers in our school. We have really great teachers, and we have a lot of local teachers. We make sure that they understand, you know, the strength of community, but the strength of being a leader of that community. And I think that if I can present that, and if I can, you know, portray that in my activities like Ninja Warrior, then, you know, then I've done what I was supposed to do on this earth.
And although I don't think Nick ever had trouble inspiring the youth in UnoCleate, he's definitely not struggling now.
Obviously, the kids are pumped that, you know, the Eskimo Ninja is from UnoCleate. You know, there's a lot of K through 5 kids that are just so pumped up. And every time they see me, hey, Nick, you want to go play on the warp wall? Let's go to the warp wall. You know, and they call my ninja course the warp wall because that's the biggest staple of the whole thing. So let's go to the warp wall. I got kids coming over, knocking on my door. You want to go play on the warp wall? It's raining. I would love to, but it's raining. I'm sorry. You know. Before you guys go, the trick is to run with the wall. All right? So the ground is flat. The wall is curved. So you're not going to keep running flat. Okay?
In UnoCleate in September, Nick unveiled a special warped wall that he had made just for the Youth Leaders Conference. It was smaller than the real warped wall, but not by much. He encouraged the kids at the conference to try running to the top. And I was amazed by how many of them were able to get to the top on their first try.
Beat that wall! Beat that wall! Beat that wall!
Later, I asked Nick if he found that the kids in UnoCleate were usually pretty good at the obstacles from American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, to be honest, I feel like being out here and living in a lifestyle that we live in a village where some villages don't have running water, so they haul their own water. Some villages have to walk through some very deep sand, like in Gamble, to get home to school. So they have natural athletic abilities just because of the lifestyle they live, the subsistence lifestyle, the hunting trips they go on where they're hiking or waiting for a animal or they're running after something or they're ice hopping to get their ugruk or seal. We're always walking across the tundra to get birds, you know, and that's hard to do for a lot of people. We're walking on the ice, which is hard to do for a lot of people, and we don't realize it, that it just comes naturally because we've been doing it our entire lives. So I feel like the Native youth have a lot of natural talent, and it's just a matter of coaching that talent into something.
Here's Nick's advice for the youth of Western Alaska, whether they're trying to become the next ninja warrior or achieve something else in their lives.
I was born here. I was raised here. I grew up in a community just like yours. I grew up in UnoCleate of 700 people, and look at what I was able to achieve. I just made a choice, and I took that choice, and I went after it, and I just didn't quit. Nothing could stop me. Growing up, I've lost 6 of my basketball teammates to alcohol-related suicides. One of them was an alcohol-related four-wheeler accident. So 7 total. And that's a really hard thing to take and to live with. And we can look at it as a negative thing, or we can look at it as a positive thing. We can say, you know what? We know that it's sad, and it's like, look how hard it is for me to talk about my teammates. You know, I don't have them anymore, but how can I use that to make sure it doesn't happen again? How can I use this suicide in my life as a way to teach kids not to make that choice? And the only way, the best way, is positivity, and to have a positive outlook and set positive goals every day. Set a minor goal for today. I'm going to wake up at 7 o'clock and I'm going to take a shower. And then figure out the rest of your goals for the day. You know what I mean? It's simple things like that that are going to change everything. And my advice would just be to take every day and find the positives in that day and use that as your energy boost for the next day, because we don't know if we're going to wake up tomorrow. And every day that we wake up is a blessing, and we have to take it for what it is. And I'm just glad that I woke up today and was able to talk to everybody.
Part 2. As you'll see in this part of the episode, Rosemary Berg's story mirrors Nick Hansen's story in a lot of ways. Rosemary's currently working in Washington, D.C., so I spoke to her over the phone. Rosemary was born in Point Hope. At the age of 6, she was adopted and moved to Anchorage, but she didn't lose her connection to Point Hope.
As an adult, I spent a lot of time there, and something that I think is amazing about Point Hope is that when you're from there, even if you've never lived there a day in your life, you're still from there and you're still family. And that's something that I found going back as an adult is home, and I'm still family.
Rosemary is half Anupiaq, half African American. In Anchorage, she attended a school that was mostly white. She says her parents were instrumental in keeping her connected to her heritage.
My family that adopted me raised me really to have a deep knowledge of my cultural background on both my Anupiaq side and my Black side as well. I think both the African-American community and both the Native American, whether it's Alaska Native down into the 48th state, they have a long history of being in situations where another culture has tried to impose their cultural values or their cultural norms on that culture. And I think that both of them have had a very good journey towards keeping a sense of identity. And so I think that with having both of those very strong cultural backgrounds that are rooted in a very rich identity, and has helped me shape a very strong and deeply rooted identity for myself.
Her personal strength was put to the test, however, when Rosemary got to college. It's a time in her life that's still difficult to bring up.
Oh, it's so hard to, in some ways it's like hard to talk about, because I just want to like, in a way, brush it under the rug and act like it didn't happen. But yeah, when I was in college, I actually experienced sexual assault, and it really impacted me mentally and emotionally and physically, and to the point that I got into a very deep depression and had a really hard time learning how to cope with that.
The sexual assault was followed by a couple of bad relationships.
In those college years, I was in a series of, I would just say, in hindsight, they were very unhealthy relationships. And the last of those relationships actually ended in an incident where I almost lost my life. And the one thing that I would say that happened that began to pick up after that is that I began to accept that the way that I was living my life without dealing with my problems, without opening up to my family, without turning to God and saying, like, I need help. Yeah, without doing those things, my life was just going to continue in that cycle. It was right before Christmas, and basically I just was faced with the reality of I need to change something in my life or I'm not going to have a life very soon if I continue on this path. And so I reached out to everyone. I talked to my mom. I reached out to my church. I began seeking counseling and therapy through the South Central Foundation, and began to really just like meet with people very regularly to learn how to cope with the different things that had happened in the past 3 years of my life.
Things started to get better for Rosemary. She worked through her trauma and regained her confidence. And it was at that point that she figured out a way to share her story of recovery with others who could benefit from it.
So I was actually going to UAS for rural development, and we were in a seminar in Juneau for the legislative seminar, and the discussion came up about, like, people's dreams. You know, it was all these young adults, and one of the things that I dreamt about was running in a pageant. In that moment, I spoke out, I think probably for the first time, that I wanted to do a pageant and that I wanted to share my story of overcoming the different things in my life. And the people in my classes really encouraged me to run for Miss WIO. So I did.
That's Miss World Eskimo Indian Olympics. I asked her to explain her motivation for running.
In December of 2011, I was in a very, very low spot where I didn't believe in my future, myself. The situation that I was in was so depressing and very hard to see any hope. And even like 2 months later after that, I saw how much hope my life had, how much it had gained in just 2 months. And that's actually around the time that I decided personally to run. And I was like, wouldn't it be so awesome to be someone that has been through all of these really hard, traumatic circumstances? Wouldn't it be awesome for that type of a person to win this type of a pageant, to represent a people group of people that are really aware of these types of situations, domestic violence, sexual assault, different types of, depression, PTSD, learning how to cope with those types of things. Yeah, I definitely saw it as a way to share a message. The Miss WIO title is an amazing title. People across the state look up to her, and it is a huge accomplishment.
Rosemary was crowned Miss WIO in 2012. Then, for 2 years after that, she traveled the world doing volunteer humanitarian work. She ended up in Brazil and New Zealand, but her pageant career wasn't over yet.
When I was Miss WIO, everybody across the state was like, you should run for Miss Alaska. You should do it. You'd be so good.
And then, back in Alaska, one specific incident officially convinced her to run.
Essentially, it all comes down to like a church service where I really felt like the Lord reminded me of a dream that I had when I was a little girl, of being in a pageant and impacting women's lives on a large scale. And it's something that I've always wanted to do. It's something I've always had a passion to do, but I never really took the steps to actually do it. And so when I came back to Alaska, I realized if I don't run for Miss Alaska now, I probably will never have the opportunity again. So I did some research and found the Miss Alaska United States pageant. And I reached out to them.
Now, something I learned from talking to Rosemary is that there are a lot of pageant systems in our country. There's Miss America, Miss USA, Miss World, Miss International. Rosemary ran for Miss Alaska in the Miss United States system. Miss United States doesn't hold a physical pageant in Alaska. Instead, Rosemary had to submit an application telling her story. Then, in December 2015, she heard back.
I was driving from Lisa Murkowski's luncheon. I think it was her Christmas tea luncheon or something. And I got an email, and I looked over at my coworker, and I was like, I could be Miss Alaska next year. And she looked at me, and she was like, you're totally going to do it. And then within the next, 2 hours, I found out that I was going to be Miss Alaska, and I flipped. It's unreal because hundreds, if not thousands, of girls across the nation have watched pageants in the past like 20 plus years. And how many of those young girls have the opportunity to say that they were a state title holder and that they competed at a national level? So I think that reality hit me super fast, and I was just like, I cannot believe this is actually happening.
As Miss Alaska, Rosemary makes monthly appearances around the state. She also competed in the Miss United States pageant in Las Vegas over the summer. Her platform as a contestant was the message, Dare to be Darling.
Dare to be Darling. That is my platform. It is a message that is meant to encourage, inspire, and empower women to discover their identity, beauty, and purpose. And I do this through making appearances, through Facebook, through interviews, through public speaking events, showing people where I've been and saying, look, this is me being darling, someone that is encouraged by people around me, someone that is inspired, someone that is empowered, but is also encouraging, inspiring, and empowering other women as well. But I also have a Facebook group of people that are interested in monthly challenges to be darling. And so last month was the first month, but it's really cool to be growing with the ladies that are in that group and see them grow as well.
To inspire others, Rosemary often shares her own story of trauma and recovery.
So I'm kind of wondering, because you mentioned earlier how sometimes it can be kind of hard to talk about these things and you kind of wish you could just brush it under the rug. So is there kind of a tension between you wanting to share your story and having this platform to share it, and on the other hand, maybe not wanting to talk about it as much?
Yeah, I think it's a very vulnerable place to be. Because it is like hurt that I have experienced, and there's part of me that's like, I think there's still like a fear of, oh, what if I just get to a place where I, you know, have flashbacks, or what if this gets me to a place where I, you know, get into depression? But every single time I'm like, well, if I stay silent about it, like, it's going to eat me up. But if I speak about how I've overcome it, I know that it's going to inspire someone else who may be in the shoes where I was, who just needs to hear that someone was like them, but their life is so different now. So, yeah, it can be hard, but I also know that in the long run, the main reason why I'm here today is because of the women that have spoken into my life of their story and how God turned our life around.
On her Facebook page, Rosemary has already seen signs that her voice is making a difference.
Yeah, you know, actually, there's been a couple people that have messaged me personally, and they knew me actually from when I was in college. And one of the individuals messaged me and was like, it is amazing to see the transformation in your life. And I actually like cried from her message because it was just like so real. Last month, there was a lot of young ladies that were active in the group. And, you know, there's one person that was wanting to cut back on the soda that they were drinking. And in the very beginning, they were drinking like a six pack a day. But, you know, by the end of it, she was down to like two pops. And everyone was just like, yes, like, you got this. And she's just like telling us each and every day, like, her progress of, wow, in the beginning of this, I could barely run at the gym, and now I'm just like, it's like nothing. And yeah, I've definitely seen the impacts in that group.
These stories of female empowerment might be surprising to some, because pageants sometimes get a bad rap. Critics think that they objectify women, that they value beauty over other accomplishments. I asked Rosemary to explain why she feels differently. She gave me three reasons.
Oh, yes. I'm like, first of all, the pageant world is amazing. I've never been surrounded by so many young women that are so passionate about positively impacting their communities just by sharing a message of either hope or love, accepting yourself, identity, or purpose. So just being in the environment around the ladies at Nationals, that in and of itself was like completely empowering. Every single woman that was there was like, I want you to succeed and I want other women to succeed. And the reason why I'm here is because I want women in this nation and the future generations to succeed.
Second, Rosemary thinks she has become a more informed citizen through her preparation for the pageant.
You need to be prepared to answer any question on politics, education, or gender inequality, or racial inequality, economics. You need to be prepared and have a stance on that. And I think being able to say for myself, like, this is actually what I believe on this issue. Before this year, I actually don't think that I had a solid stance on some of the issues that I've sat down and said, okay, this is actually where I stand.
And lastly, the opportunity to celebrate beauty is, to Rosemary, part of the draw of pageants.
I think in some ways, I've always been kind of like a glam diva, like fashionista type of a person. And I think one of the ways I would say that I also felt empowered was the, excuse to just be myself with fashion and makeup and hair and do those types of things without people criticizing it. They're like, oh, well, you're Miss Alaska. Of course you would have like this crazy makeup on that you would normally just wear to like a ball. So I wore that like every day and crazy high heels. And I just made the excuse, I'm practicing for the pageant, but I just really wanted to wear those shoes anyway. So
Rosemary is so confident and positive that if you met her on the street, you might not imagine that she has hardship in her past, but she does. And it's a part of her history she doesn't shy away from. I asked Rosemary to take a moment to speak directly to people who are suffering the way she was a few years ago. Here's what she had to say.
Just know you're not alone. And even Miss Alaska has struggled with depression. Even Miss Alaska has struggled with PTSD and trying to deal with trauma, or the loss of a friend to suicide, or the loss of a loved one or a family member to cancer or other sicknesses. The biggest thing is to know you are not alone. The second thing I would say is to know that you are loved. If we reach out to one or two people when we're struggling and they're not available because they didn't expect us to reach out to them at that moment, or maybe they're unavailable because they maybe just weren't the best friends, we can quickly jump to a conclusion that we're unlovable. But I'm like, that's a lie, because I've traveled a lot around the world, and I will say that some of the most loving people that I have ever met in my life are people that are from Alaska. And there's just a beauty and a warmth that is in the hearts of our people.
Thank you so much to all who made this episode possible. Special thanks to Nick Hansen, Rosemary Berg, the school in Unalakleet, and Leslie Schwartz at NBC Universal. Music in this episode was by Mystery Mammal, Jason Shaw, and Kevin McLeod. If you or someone you know has a story to share, contact KNOM at 443-5221 or by email at story49@knom.org. Story 49, sharing your story, your voice, your Alaska.